This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million and tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the center of the financial universe this week. The G20 leaders are meeting there amid promises to avoid a repeat of the credit crisis. So, exactly, how are they going to do that? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Batten Institute, advancing knowledge about entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, www.batteninstitute.org. Coverage of Asia is supported by the Freeman Foundation.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Good to have you here on this Thursday. It is the 24th of September today, and that means the two-day G20 meeting is already practically halfway over. There is a long list of competing things that various heads of state want to get done. More banking regulations from one, limits on executive pay from another. And another one that has picked up steam the past week or so, something that's being described as rebalancing the global economy. That seemed a bigger goal than all the rest, so we've called economist Steve Dunaway at the Council on Foreign Relations for an explanation. Mr. Dunaway, good to have you here.
Nice to be with you, Kai.
This concept of rebalancing the global economy, what exactly does that mean?
Well, it comes back to a problem that's existed throughout this decade in terms of imbalances in savings and investment among major economies. The U.S. Saves too little. And then the East Asian countries save too much, particularly China, owing in large part to various distortions and disincentives that discourage consumption. So these imbalances resulted in the large deficit in the U.S. and the surpluses in Japan and Europe, and particularly the very large surplus in China.
All right. So help me understand then how those imbalances play into a global summit on fixing the financial crisis. What did those imbalances have to do with causing the financial crisis?
Well, the reverse side of these large trade surpluses was that led to very large flows of capital, especially from the East Asian developing countries to the developed countries. And most of this capital ended up in the United States. And this flow of capital, Ben Bernanke referred to it as a glut of savings. And it had the effect of depressing real interest rates worldwide, and that's what led to the financial engineering, which helped contribute to the crisis.
Let me make sure I understand that. So people who had the savings, East Asians in most cases, sent their money here. That drove interest rates down, which caused people to go looking for investments that would get them some better returns. And hence, we got mortgage-backed securities and all the rest of that.
Exactly.
All right. That being the case, then, here we have this summit of which a lot of the headline talk has been CEO pay and capital ratios in banks and those kinds of things. How is something as fundamental as rebalancing the global economy going to get done in 2 days in Pittsburgh?
Well, it's not going to get done in 2 days in Pittsburgh. But the very important thing is that this has been, I've thought for a long time, a major item that's been left off the agenda. So the fact that it's back on the agenda is very important, that the countries are beginning to talk about it again and coming around to trying to come up with a new mechanism to bolster commitment to the necessary policy changes, and then to provide some type of supervision or peer pressure to see that those policy changes are implemented. You know, that's an encouraging step.
What happens, Mr. Dunaway, if, as a result of the financial crisis fading into memory and the global economy eventually recovering, as it will, this rebalancing doesn't happen?
Well, if it doesn't happen, then you're in a situation probably not unlike the 1930s in terms of you have tremendous amount of productive capacity in the world economy, and you just have insufficient demand. Because if the U.S. is not there providing the ultimate demand for consumer goods, then the world economy just doesn't grow. Unless other countries step up and take the necessary policy changes to shift more towards, in the case of Japan and Europe, more rapid growth, which would boost demand in those economies. In the case of China, greater reliance on consumption to drive growth.
Stephen Dunaway, he's a senior fellow in international economics at the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Dunaway, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
The major indices fell out of balance on Wall Street today. We will have the details when we do the numbers. Some criticism of the Obama administration's plans to reform the financial industry today. Criticism that came from one of the administration's key economic advisors. Former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker told the House Financial Services Committee today that even with the reforms that are being proposed, there will still be plenty of firms, some of them that aren't even banks, that are going to be too big to fail and would still have to be bailed out.
Some of the benefits, anyway, of the safety net have been extended outside the banking system. That's what I want to change. But you can't change it just by saying it's not going to happen because you're going to have problems.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reminds us that there are plenty of banks within that safety net that are now bigger than ever.
Let's start with Citigroup. It was so big, it got a $45 billion rescue loan from taxpayers last year when the financial crisis hit. It's already sold off some of its businesses, and today there are reports, which Citi is denying, that it's planning to scale back retail banking operations. But Morningstar analyst Matthew Warren says none of this even dents Citi's status as too big to fail.
You know, Citi's still an enormous bank. We're talking about the retail banking here, but, you know, they have an enormous investment bank that's interconnected globally, and this doesn't change that at all.
In fact, Warren says if anything's changing at the nation's largest financial institutions, it's that they're getting larger. J.P. Morgan now owns Washington Mutual, Wells Fargo snapped up Wachovia, and Warren says even today, several of the largest insurance companies and hedge funds would also require a taxpayer bailout to avert disaster.
I think we've actually codified too big to fail. There's no way that we're going to be able to walk back from that. Now it's more of a process of managing that situation.
Karen Shaw Petru at Federal Financial Analytics in Washington agrees many firms are still too big to fail. But she says putting a cap on size isn't the answer. Banks, she says, will find a way around those caps and take just as much risk.
It makes much more sense to force institutions to disconnect so that if one of them experiences problems, a whole row of dominoes doesn't go down.
And on that score, she says, the Obama administration's plan, as proposed, would do what's needed to reduce systemic risk. Lawmakers expect a bill to be ready for the president's signature by the end of the year. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
If you've been in a department store lately, you might have noticed that it's beginning to look a lot like last Christmas. Markdowns all over the place, promotions and rewards and gimmicks to get shoppers to buy more. Retail analysts are saying stores could suffer some of the worst holiday sales in decades. Joel Rose reports things may not be that bad.
Best case scenario, this year's holiday sales will be a tiny bit better than last year's, which were awful. But analysts say retail profits should be much better than last year. If that sounds like a contradiction, consider H&M. The trendy Swedish retailer announced third quarter results today. Sales were lower than expected, but earnings were higher.
We're seeing that a lot throughout retail in general.
Patty Edwards is an analyst with Storehouse Partners. She says retailers large and small are cutting costs wherever they can.
There's less merchandise. They're also cutting their sales staff and in some cases closing underperforming stores. And all of those help the earnings, but don't depend on sales.
National retailers are also getting smarter about what kinds of merchandise they stock where. Macy's spokesman Jim Slezewski says his company is giving individual stores more influence over what they sell.
In Chicago, we have heard from customers that they needed larger size women's shoes, specifically size 11. This has had a market effect on our shoe sales in those stores in those markets.
Slezewski says Macy's stores are also carrying a lot less inventory than they did last year. That's fine for now, says analyst Patty Edwards. But she says retailers can't just cut their way to long-term growth. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Sometimes things don't work out exactly the way you plan. That's a lesson Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein is learning all over again. Last week, Blankfein was in Frankfurt, Germany, attacking Wall Street compensation. He called the public outrage over bankers' pay, quote, understandable and appropriate. And yet, rumor on Wall Street has it that Goldman's own bonus pool this year is going to be near record levels, which suggests there is more outrage to come, as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
It's hard being so good. Goldman Sachs is expected to report another quarter of bumper profits next month. Analysts credit the stock market rally, a surge in deal-making, less competition, and, oh yeah, a big boost from the federal government.
I think it is an awkward PR moment for Goldman.
That's Len Blum with Westwood Capital. Goldman paid back its $10 billion in bailout money. Blum says the company can pay its employees what it wants.
Some people might not feel good about that, but they made money and, you know, they have the right to distribute their profits as they see fit.
But a populist backlash could reignite the ire of lawmakers. Rolf Copeland is with the Capstone Partnership, a Wall Street recruiting firm.
If they do pay out these huge bonuses now, that's just going to infuriate more and more people. So you just ratchet up that heat and Wall Street better take care because they can get crushed. With a lot of these new regulations that are being tossed around, they'll be just adding wood to the fire to do it.
Then again, if they don't pay huge bonuses, some say all those masters of the universe that have been making Goldman money could walk out the door. Eric Moskowitz is head of compensation consulting at Options Group. He says as the market bounces back, bankers want their pay to bounce back too.
There is a lot of room for optimism, and thus bonus expectations have risen across Wall Street and across, of course, all the global capital markets.
Moskowitz says Goldman may try to strike a balance by paying less cash, more stock, and deferred compensation. Goldman Sachs had no comment. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
We should all have troubles like Lloyd Blankfein and Goldman Sachs, right? So much money you don't know how to talk about it? The fact is that out-of-whack pay scales on Wall Street have been part of the problem. Commentator Andy Kessler says no amount of regulation by Congress, the president, or the G20, for that matter, is going to fix things.
Part of the charm of Wall Street, and what scares most reasonable people away, is that it is as close to a meritocracy as exists on this earth. It's dog-eat-dog, sink or swim. You do a trade and it works, you're a hero. Lassoing clients, you're a hitter. The flip side, of course, is what makes Wall Street so dangerous. You lose money more than once, and you're out of a job. Just like that, gone. There's no tenure on Wall Street, no job security. 10 and 20-year careers end in a flash. That's one reason why everyone is paid so well. Think of it as combat pay. They make your life miserable, hoping you'll quit before they break you, or hoping they break you before you lose money for the firm. It's not the post office. It's trial by fire. You would think that would make the entire workforce afraid to do anything for fear of being tossed out on their can, back into the cruel, cruel, averagely paid world. But a meritocracy works in the opposite way. You have wicked smart people trying to prove to each other that they are smarter than everyone else. Unlike acing a chemistry final or even nailing your SAT tests, the score is kept with real money, how much of the bonus pool you command for your do-or-die heroics. Lehman Brothers was a classic Wall Street meritocracy. They wanted to one-up Goldman Sachs to win the meritocracy game and get paid in spades. Let's leverage this sucker up with mortgages. A $1 trillion balance sheet. Hey, if not us, who? When that trade went south, Lehman went bust. You lose money, you're out. Goodbye. Unless, of course, the government bails you out. To prevent the next blow-up, the G20 is trying to limit pay and banish risk. But no matter what bureaucrats do, Wall Street's meritocracy of getting paid will live on. They're gonna figure out a way around any new rules. The game might move to hedge funds or some other dark corner of the financial market, but no amount of reform is going to kill Wall Street's animal instincts.
Andy Kessler is a former hedge fund manager. He writes books now. You can write to us. Online is best. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. Coming up, home loans and dodgy deals.
As soon as the caller called in, it was a really hard sell. It was to scare the daylights out of the homeowner, and they were pretty good about it.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials dropped 41 points today, 0.4%, closed at 9,707. The NASDAQ dropped 23 points, more than 1%, finished at 2107. The S&P 500 lost 10 points, nearly 1%, ended things at 1050, 1050 there. Companies with any kind of exposure to the housing sector fell on some lousy home sales news. Shares of Pulte Homes fell more than 3%. Rival KB Home dropped 1.5% today. Home Depot slid roughly 1.1% today. Sagging petroleum prices put the skids under big oil. Chevron leaked nearly 1%. ExxonMobil dribbled a 0.1% lower. Oil wasn't the only commodity taking a hit today. Everything from pork bellies to platinum lost ground as the dollar rose. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Monsanto, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields without increasing demands on natural resources. More at producemoreconservemore.com. Keep an eye on Marketplace wherever you go. iPhone users can listen to business news and updates on the fallout from the financial crisis. Watch the Marketplace whiteboards and follow the Scratchpad blog. Just visit marketplace.org on your iPhone.
On the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the Commerce Department releases new home sales data for the month of August. The Food and Drug Administration wraps up a public workshop to discuss how to provide effective prescription drug information for consumers. And on September 25, 1981, Sandra Day O'Connor became the first woman to serve as a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Past couple of days, we have been looking at all the bailouts from last fall and how to get out of them, the ones from the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve, and today the first big one from a year ago, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They hold about half the nation's home loans, trillions of dollars worth, but they are tricky to talk about because before they were rescued, they were, in theory anyway, private companies. But they were also government-sponsored. They had the implicit, if not the outright, backing of Washington. Now, of course, they are owned by the federal government. Lawrence White is a professor of economics at NYU's Stern School of Business. Professor, good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Little-known fact of the bailout timeline is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac got their bailouts before Lehman Brothers actually ever went under, the week before they did. Remind us why we had to bail them out.
Fannie and Freddie were having difficulties in financing themselves. They had invested in mortgages like lots of other people that had turned out to be worth less than Fannie and Freddie paid for them. Also, on the mortgage-backed securities that Fannie and Freddie had issued to investors over $4 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities, there had been an explicit guarantee that if the mortgage borrowers failed to repay the mortgage, Fannie and Freddie would step up and make the investors whole. To not step in would have really meant chaos in the financial markets generally and in the mortgage markets especially. The federal government couldn't not do what they did.
And so we basically wrote them a check for $200 billion. What did they do with that money? Did they plow that back into the housing market?
Basically, that money is being used to satisfy their obligations, but it has kept them going. And so they are able to continue to fund purchases of mortgages and buy mortgages, wrap them up in safe packages, and send them out the door as mortgage-backed securities.
And you're okay with them being in the mortgage-backed securities business still?
This is basically a plain vanilla type of operation. This is not the subprime story. The subprime story is a very different story.
How might we get that money back then without doing damage to a still fragile housing market?
Well, I'm not so sure we're going to see that money back. I think that both places are insolvent.
They're still insolvent, a year and a half, 2 years into this credit crisis.
That's right. I mean, yes, the federal money has been used to fill in the hole, but it's filled in the hole. And so they are, absent the federal money, still insolvent.
Can you see a way that we might be able to spin out those companies and free the government of the debt and make them, as many suggested for years and years, make them actual private companies without the explicit or implicit guarantee of the federal government?
Well, I think it is possible. We can't do it now. The mortgage markets, the financial markets more generally, are still too fragile. Over the longer run, what does that mean? Maybe 2-3 years from now. It is certainly possible. I hope the Obama administration will see this as the appropriate exit route. In so doing, though, I think the federal government is simply going to have to eat the essentially the money that it has put into those entities. It's not coming back.
Lawrence White, he's a professor of economics at the Stern School of Business at New York University. Professor White, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Every crisis brings with it new business opportunities. Not all of those businesses, unfortunately, are on the up and up.
You have reached 21st Century Legal Services. If you know your party's extension, you may enter it at any time.
21st Century Legal Services is what's called a mortgage modification company. It promises to help homeowners who are in over their heads renegotiate their loans after they pay big fees up front.
It's a wonderful day at 21st Century. How may I help you?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Joanna Williams, and I saw your site on the internet.
That woman's name isn't really Joanna Williams. She's an undercover investigator at the North Carolina Attorney General's office. And the tape you're hearing is part of a sting they were running. They were looking into companies that are ripping off desperate homeowners and then disappearing. Paul Keel at ProPublica, the investigative newsroom, got the tape for us as part of our joint investigation into mortgage modification scams. From Washington, Marketplace's Steve Henn picks up the story.
Federal, state, and local law enforcement have filed more than 150 suits against mortgage modification firms, but the companies keep popping up. As the story of 21st Century shows, anything short of forcibly shutting them down can be ineffective.
Hello?
Are you a homeowner?
Yes, I'm a homeowner.
Are you interested in cutting your payment down?
Yes.
Salesmen here live on commission.
This is 21st Century Legal Services. Our attorney can get you 3.5%, 4%, 30-year fix. Does that sound good?
Of course. Wait a minute. 3.5% to 4% fixed?
Yes, 30-year fix or whatever kind of fix you need.
3.5%. That's a too-good-to-be-true interest rate. And the salesman hadn't even asked her name. But at 21st Century, promises like this are routine. The only catch is a big fee up front. When Williams said she couldn't afford that, the salesman suggested she stop paying her mortgage. After all, it would make it easier to pay him.
But it looks better because when they see that you're behind, you're falling behind, that you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That looks better on you.
That advice, stop paying your mortgage, has ended with many of 21st century's clients facing foreclosure. And because of that, many states, including California, ban these kinds of upfront fees. But that hasn't stopped 21st century legal services from collecting them.
We're in Rancho Cucamonga, California. We have four offices out here. We're opening up a fifth.
Wow.
We've been doing this for years.
Actually, 21st Century was founded less than a year ago by Andrea Ramirez. She's a former mortgage broker with a record of selling exotic loans her clients can't afford. But she's moved on. Ramirez now generates fees by promising to fix the kinds of mortgage nightmares she helped create.
It's the flip side of the mortgage brokerage business.
Tom McNamara is an attorney in San Diego. He worked as a court-appointed receiver with the Federal Trade Commission and helped shut down a similar firm.
What I found, which that was relatively interesting, is that most of the folks that are doing these were mortgage brokers.
McNamara says they're boiler room operations.
As soon as the caller called in, it was a really hard sell. It was to scare the daylights out of the homeowner. And they were pretty good about it.
And this industry is booming. In the past year, more than 800 mortgage modification firms have set up shop in Southern California alone. Law enforcement officials believe most of these are violating the law.
This is a very big scam.
California Attorney General Jerry Brown.
In terms of overt violation of the criminal and civil law, these so-called loan modification companies, they take the prize.
But Brown compares enforcement efforts to playing whack-a-mole.
We are shutting them down, and they open up.
Firms change names, change locations, and get back in business. But 21st Century Legal Services stands out. Its founder, Ramirez, was convicted in 2008 of forging prescriptions for OxyContin, and that could soon cost her real estate license. Customers have filed more complaints against this company with the Better Business Bureau than any other similar firm in Southern California. More than 150 complaints from at least 30 states. State officials in Arkansas, Indiana, Ohio, and North Carolina have sued the firm, barring it from doing business within their borders. Other states have open investigations, but the company hasn't stopped making calls like this one.
All that stuff on the news about fraudulent companies asking for money up front is a bunch of garbage. Okay, we ask for a percentage up front because it's a retainer fee for our attorney for representation.
Company officials didn't respond to Marketplace's calls, and 21st Century's attorney hasn't responded to suits or letters from legal authorities from at least six states. Instead, the company has changed its name to Fidelity National Legal Services, and it's still in business. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Thanks to Paul Keel at ProPublica for his help with that story. There's a link on our website that'll get you to some of the internal documents from 21st Century that ProPublica has uncovered. Our homepage is marketplace.org. Of course, 21st Century isn't the only company under investigation. Tune into our personal finance program, Marketplace Money, this weekend to hear what one homeowner went through.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today brought to you by the good folks at Hallmark, the greeting card people. They are betting consumers are sick and tired of all the news about misbehaving celebrities. So by gosh, they are going to do something about it. Next month, the Hallmark Channel is going to launch a new website called CelebrityGoodLife.com. Only good news about your favorite tabloid fodder, please. I don't know, maybe John and Kate helping an old lady across the street or something. Maybe it's just me, but doesn't that defeat the purpose of celebrity news? I don't know. That is Marketplace from American Public Media this Thursday afternoon. Today, the Dow dropped 41 points, 0.4%. The NASDAQ down 23 points, more than 1%. The S&P 500 off 10 points, nearly 1%. John Buckley, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, Phyllis Owens, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. Coming up next time on the broadcast, buying baseball tickets on the go.
We're finding a lot of success within a shorter window, 10 days to a week outside of the game.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.